Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Parental Wisdom's Park Bench Series. Tonight, our topic is about role modeling peace. Our guest this evening is Naomi Drew, who is recognized around the world as an expert on conflict resolution, peacemaking, and parenting. She's the author of 6 widely used books, including Peaceful Parents, Peaceful Kids, and The Kid's Guide to Working Out Conflict. Ms. Drew helps parents do the most pressing job of our time, creating peace one family at a time. Her work has been featured in newspapers, magazines, on radio, and national TV, and she leads workshops nationally. She's also an advisor to Parental Wisdom. Naomi, welcome. I heard a great quote. It said that conflict is inevitable, combat is optional. Now, with the holidays still fresh in our mind, we understand that peace is more than the absence of war. It's about the environment we create for ourselves and our families. So I would just like to ask you some questions that have been posed by Parental Wisdom members, okay?
Sure.
Well, the first one is, and this is a big one, some parents are yellers. How can they calm down when the kids are driving them nuts? And you know, when you answer this, can you tell us you've got these tips about how to unhook from anger? Could you include those as well?
You bet, because the issue of yelling, everywhere I go working with parents, that's a major issue. And it's interesting because it's a human issue. I mean, we all get angry. It's not that we're bad because we get angry, but sometimes we, in the moment, we react in ways that actually aren't even helpful. Because most parents that I talk to who say, you know, I'm a yeller, they say, but my kids tune me out. And I'm sure the people on the line are thinking that. Or as they get older, the kids' voices will start to raise with ours, and then we become a yelling family. So it reminds me of this little anecdote. I just have to share this before I give the little tips because it's so perfect. They said that trying to discipline your children and get good behavior through yelling is about as effective as trying to steer your car by leaning on the horn. You know, so it's the same degree of effectiveness. If we yell once in a while, you know, then it's like a surprise to the kids, and they will turn around and listen. But if it's our main discipline tool, they're going to tune us out. So what can we do? Because those angry feelings, those moments of frustration are very, very natural, and all parents share them. So I'm going to give a couple of unhooking from anger tips that will work with yelling and any other frustrating situation. First thing is, we need to lower the volume on stress in our own lives a little bit. And the first thing that I want to advise all parents to do is try to find ways to not rush as much, because rushing builds tension. Tension leads to yelling. One mom I was talking to the other day said, you know, I'm rushing constantly. And when I stopped and looked at my life, I realized I don't have to be rushing as much as I am, but it became habitual for her, just as it becomes habitual for so many of us living in this crazy, busy society. So the first thing, if we want to unhook from anger, is try to unhook from rushing as much and try to do at least one thing each day that makes you feel good, that makes you feel a little bit relaxed. Otherwise, we're in this ball of tension that it's very hard to unhook from, and the minute our kid does something to set us off, we're gone. That's it. Next tip is, I'm going to actually teach this on the phone. There's a form of deep breathing that I advise parents to practice this at times when you're not with your children. So when you're with them and they're really getting on your last nerve, you can just kind of do this automatically. And the way to do it, that, by the way, this is different than the usual kind of take a deep breath kind of breath we take. It's a deep abdominal kind of breathing that actually feeds oxygen to the brain, helps us think straight in those moments when we can't think straight at all, and it also relaxes the body. So the way to do it, and those of you who are on the phone listening, try this with me. Put your hands on your lower abdominal muscles. Imagine that you've got a balloon down there, and I know for some of us that's easy to to imagine. and what we're going to do is take a very slow, deep breath all the way down as though the oxygen can actually go right through the lower lungs and right into that imaginary balloon in your lower abdomen. Hold the breath deep in your body for a couple of seconds, imagining that breath just circulating through your entire body and calming you. And then very slowly exhale the breath, very, very slowly, as you imagine deflating the muscles in your lower abdomen. And if you can actually pull those in a little as though you're deflating a balloon, try that too. That's the abdominal breathing part where we're thinking of the breath as going right into that spot. The reason this helps is because it enables us to take a far deeper breath than we normally might. And there's some research behind this that five of those breaths will literally lower your pulse rate. So that deep abdominal breathing is another way to unhook from anger. The other is to have a calming statement ready, like your own personal mantra. So when your child does something that gets on your last nerve, you have this statement that you know you can make to unhook from the angry thoughts and the stress-producing hormones that kick in when we start getting reactivated to anger. My calming statement is, I can handle this. So in that moment that somebody sets me off, I'll take that slow, deep breath. They don't even have to know I'm doing it. I'll make that calming statement to myself. And another thing, this is very subtle, is to actually feel your feet on the ground. Because normally when we go into this reaction, we're thinking these racing thoughts like, I'm going to kill him, or I never should have become a mother. Things that just make us feel worse and make us react more. We kind of focus on, my feet are planted on the ground. I'm here, I'm stable, and I'm thinking my calming thought. Then we can retrieve our grounding and stop reacting so much to our children.
That was great. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. I do it all the time, so trust me, it works.
I'm just laughing about the mantra. I could see myself maybe having some jewelry prepared, you know, with the mantra on it. But what about when the kids bicker? You know, the kids bicker all the time, and how could we teach? Because that sometimes gets us. It's kind of like this loop, you know. So the kids are bickering, and really, if we could teach our kids how to talk out those conflicts instead of fighting, you know, basically teach them to be part of the conflict solution rather than create conflicts. What ideas do you have for that?
Beautiful. Well, the first is everything I just said for yourself, you know, to unhook from anger, teach all of that to your kids. Teach it to them at a neutral time. So not when they're angry, like, okay, take some deep breaths, but at a time when you're cuddly together and you're just talking and it's comfortable, and to say to them, you know, I want to teach you a couple of things that can actually help you calm down when you feel angry, and it'll give you a sense of greater control in your life. So that's the first thing. The next is I'm going to give you a six-step strategy, which, by the way, is on my website, learningpeace.com. You can download this along with many, many articles that are on that site. So, again, it's www.learningpeace.com, and the name of the strategy is the Win-Win Guidelines. Now, if we have parents of younger children on the line, I'm going to modify these next. The first, I just want to take you through the six steps, then I'm going to show you how to modify them for younger children. So first step in helping kids resolve a conflict. By the way, this can work for us too when we have our own conflicts. So first step is cool off. We cannot force kids to talk out a conflict in the heat of anger. It's not a human reaction to be able to just suddenly calm down and your anger disappears because someone says we got to talk it out. And I'm sure you've all experienced that. When you try to force them, very often it just backfires and they end up bickering even more. So we want to give them time to cool off, separate them, let them each get a drink of water, let them go to their rooms for a little while, not as a punishment. Just say, listen, go, cool off, relax, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about it when everyone's a little calmer. Next step is for each of the children to state what's bothering them, and of course, while one states it, the other one listens. State what's bothering them, but to start from the word I rather than you. So it would be something like this. I felt so annoyed when she pulled the remote control out of my hands when we were watching TV and she didn't ask. My own kids used to do this. Now, that's a lot less inflammatory than, well, looking at the other person and saying, well, you know, you were so mean before, you just grabbed from me. So the you will inflame the conflict further and make the bickering worse. The I neutralizes things. So we need to teach this again ahead of time, how we start from I rather than you. So that's step two, for each person to say what's on their mind, but starting from I, the other person listens when their I don't like to use the word opponent, but the sibling they're having the conflict with is speaking. We can help here by paraphrasing what was heard. So let's say one child says, "Well, I was really angry when you pulled the remote out of my hand." And the other child says, "Well, yeah, but I wanted to turn and you never put it down, you know, and I felt like you were hogging it." So as mom or dad, we can then paraphrase and say, "Okay, so let me see if we have this straight. So Susie, you were annoyed because Janie pulled it out of your hand. And Janie was annoyed because she felt that you were just holding on to it for too long and you weren't sharing it." So the paraphrasing kind of clarifies what the issue is, and it also gives them a minute to hear each other's point of view once again. By the way, as they get used to this, you can actually start having them paraphrase for each other. You can ask them, "Could you just say back what your sister said or what your brother said?" And saying back doesn't mean you agree. It just means you heard them. And if you listen and hear them, they will be more likely to do the same for you. Okay, so that's step two. Step three is to, by the way, step three is actually the listening, but we combine those. So the next step, which would be step four, is to each person needs to take responsibility for what they did. So as a mom, you might say, "Okay, Susie, so is there some way that you were even just a little bit responsible in this conflict?" So that's her time to reflect a little. And if she says no, there was no way, you might want to say, "Well, just think about it just a little, because in just about every conflict, both people are just a little bit responsible. So just try and think if there was anything at all that you might have done that added to the conflict." And then you ask the other child, and was there some way that you were just even a little tiny bit responsible? And by the way that kids can start learning to take responsibility is when they see us do it. So let's say if we've had a conflict with one of our children, if we are willing to say, "You know what? I'm realizing this is how I was responsible here." Like, I'll give you a personal example before we go on to the next step. So when my kids were younger, because my kids are now both grown and out of the house, but when they were younger, I can remember on days when I was really grouchy and I came home from work and had a bad day, and then I'd walk by my son's room, let's say my older son, Michael, because he always had such a messy room, and then I might just be very snippy with him, like, "Would you just pick up all that stuff already? I can't stand looking at all this mess." And then he would get angry back at me, and then we'd have this big blow-up. So after I would have the chance to cool off, then I'd go back to him, and I'd say, "Listen, I realize I was responsible here because I was really grouchy with you, and I really said that in such a snippy way. And, you know, I'm just wondering if there's a way that you are responsible that you can think of." And I can remember my son saying, "Well, you know, I probably should have picked my stuff up. I know how much it aggravates you." So by modeling this, our children become more able to do it. So that was step four. Step five is to have the kids, if they're five and up, they can do that, have them come up with a solution themselves. So let's go back to the remote control. So instead of us saying, "Okay, why don't the two of you share? Why don't you take turns?" Or, you know, whatever we normally say, we look at them and say, "Okay, is there some way that the two of you can think of solving this problem so it doesn't keep happening again?" And if they are mature enough, let's say even 5 years old, if they are mature enough, you could even walk away for a few minutes at this point and let them sit down and talk about some of those solutions. And don't be shocked or disappointed if at first they don't say anything, like, "No, we can't think of anything." Let them sit with it for a few minutes, because often what happens is they will eventually start trying to think of a solution. And when they discuss it together, they're doing the most important thing that we can do to solve a conflict, which is to start compromising. And then the last step, number six, to tie the whole thing together is for the two kids to either acknowledge and affirm each other, say something nice, like, "Okay, I'm really glad we're still sisters, even though sometimes we fight," or to apologize, or to thank, or to forgive, you know, to say, "Gee, I forgive you for, you know, for doing that." would you forgive me too? We don't want to force an apology, though. So sometimes we'll say, come on, say you're sorry, and the kids will look at each other and go, okay, sorry. And you know they don't mean it. So we might want to let them sit with that too a little bit and say, well, you know, think about it. Maybe later, if you feel that you can sincerely apologize, that might be a good thing to do. So that was the long version. Short version for younger kids is always in any conflict, number one, let them cool off first. Number two, have them both talk over what the problem is and encourage them to start from I. Let them just listen back and forth. Then jump right down to how are we going to work this out? That's that coming up with solutions. And for younger children, you might want to suggest a couple of things and then let them choose one. Because by choosing, it empowers them to start becoming problem solvers rather than just leaning on us to do it.
That was great. Naomi, this might work for Congress. Never mind kids.
Oh, please. they need it desperately.
I'm listening to all these iMessages and everything. It sounds terrific. Well, that was great because that's what a lot of a lot of parents battle with. In fact, one thing that we did in our house on this bickering thing is when the kids were little, we created a child of the day because most of the arguments are, I want to do this first or he got that first or whatever. So it pulled me completely out of the picture. So it really was successful here. But what happens when your spouse disagrees on the way you're handling something and this is said in front of the kids?
Okay. Now, it's so important that you sit down with your spouse at a neutral time, not in front of the kids, and agree that you will get on the same page in front of the kids and save those disagreements for private, because otherwise, if you're going to have those disagreements in front of them, over them, like, no, I don't really think they need to go to bed now. Let them stay up for a few minutes. Then what starts to happen is the kids, you know, kids are smart, and they get into that whole divide and conquer thing. They use it sometimes to manipulate. This is something we don't want to encourage in our children, any form of manipulation. The other thing is if we really are battling our spouse in front of the children, it's terribly stressful to them, terribly upsetting. I've had guidance counselors at schools tell me that is one of the most upsetting things that children come in and talk to them about, you know, mom and dad fighting in front of them, especially fighting over them, because then they feel that it's their fault. So this is where we really need to use our maturity and our self-control and that deep breathing and that calming statement. So if our spouse says, let's say, for example, in fact, I just had this with some parents I was working with. One spouse felt that the children should be able to stay up a little later on a school night. Let's say your spouse says that in front of the children. Maybe on that night, let it go. Let them stay up a little bit later, even though it might kill you, but just for the sake of not arguing in front of them. Then, once the kids are in bed and the two of you are together, go talk where they cannot hear you and find a way of compromising on the issue in private so that when you're with the children, you're going to back each other up.
Well, actually, what you're talking about, really, all of your solutions, everything really relates to a good foundation of communication.
Yeah.
I mean, even the fact that you just said that the guidance counselors are telling you what's bothering the children. So obviously, the children are talking to someone. How do you get your child to communicate with you? What if they don't communicate with you enough? What could a parent do to encourage more of that?
Well, it's important to start when they're very, very young. And, you know, the most important form of communication that we can do is listening. So if we can find some time during the day where we can truly listen with all our heart to what our child has to say, that's our most important teaching tool, as well as it's something that kids need. They need to be heard. The other thing is if you possibly can, spend 15 to 20 minutes a day per child alone with that child. Now, if you're a single parent or if your spouse or partner isn't around and you just can't juggle, let's say if you have three children, to do that each night for every child, alternate nights where, let's say, one child knows on Monday night, that's my night to go in my room and shut the door with mommy. And we just have that time where we are together. And very often it's during those times that our children will open up. But here's the caveat. We can't have our own agenda. Sometimes parents will come to me and they'll say, well, I want to hear what went on in school. And my child does not want to talk about that.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
I know. And if we have that agenda, though, it shuts down their inclination to communicate what's important to them. And I'm going to give an example here. I remember one mom saying to me, well, my son is like mute. He doesn't tell me anything. And I said, well, what is he interested in? And she said, Legos. So I said, all right, your doorway into your son is to sit with him during that 15 to 20 minutes a night and build Legos with him and let him tell you what he's building, because that's going to be the door opener. She said, but I really have no interest in that. I said, right, but you will eventually, perhaps, get to the things you are interested in if you can let him talk about the things that interest him first. You're entering his world that way. Well, she did this. She did this for several nights, might have been an entire week. And by the following week, he started to talk to her a little bit about school. And it started with Legos, though. He said, Mommy, I built this when I was in school, too. But you know what? I really had a bad day. And then he started telling why he had a bad day in school. And it all started with her being willing to sit there and enter his world through the things that interest him.
That was great. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I want to give our callers some time to ask you questions directly. Mm-hmm. So if anyone out there has muted the background, just press *6 again to unmute, and please feel free to ask Naomi a question.
I'm hearing lots of buttons.
Anyone? Does anyone want to ask a question?
Hello?
I just want to elaborate. I'm sorry.
I'm
go ahead.
Somebody.
Oh, yeah. I was just like, hello. I didn't realize I could be heard.
Yeah.
How are you? Naomi, I actually met you at a UFT workshop.
Oh, yes. This year, last year, the year before?
This year, well,
oh,
not this,
great.
Not 08, but 07.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. That was a wonderful workshop.
It was a wonderful workshop. It was a nice little surprise. We were supposed to go to another one, and it was closed. And so it was a nice surprise. And I've actually been in contact with you by email to see if we can get together and get a couple of the schools.
Wonderful. Who am I talking to?
This is Vanessa Bravo.
Oh, hi, Vanessa. Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's your question, Vanessa?
Well, I am a yeller.
Join the club.
Yes, I am a yeller. You're absolutely right. A lot of it has to do with our own stress and our own volume of stress and the rushing. And, like, I just started a new job, and I found that as a stay-at-home mom the transition from going stay-at-home mom to working mom is kind of a little stressful. So
sure.
I do the preparing the night before, the ironing mm-hmm. the night before, the separating mm-hmm. the snacks the night before. So that has released it. I don't do the rushing in the morning.
Good.
But my son is very antsy in school, and he's
mm-hmm.
5 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he's very bright mm-hmm. to the point that I believe that he's bored, and me and his teacher and I are trying to figure out what to do best.
Mm-hmm.
But it's become so hard because after a while you hear the same thing. Well, Alejandro, he didn't behave, and I don't know what else to do.
Yelling is not going to do it for him. Have you asked him straight out? What tell me what's going on. Like if the teacher calls and says, well, he got in trouble today, like what's a typical thing he might do?
His typical thing is he can't sit still. So when they're sitting in a circle, he'll lay down on the floor.
Okay.
And the minute he gets bored or he's not interested in whatever they're talking about, that's it. He's is he's already floating, and his ideas are already all over the place, and so he's not paying attention. That's the main thing. In gym, he can't sit still. You know, if everybody else is sitting, he can't do that. Yeah.
Well, his teacher is not going to like what I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
What I think the solution is, I think the solution is to let him get up and walk around a little bit. I mean, he's only five. Kids have trouble sitting still at five. And education is changing. We're starting to see that. Sometimes we have to be a little more adaptable to, you know, children's needs. I mean, he's probably trying to sit, isn't he?
Yes,
or is he being defiant?
And he knows he's supposed to sit.
Right.
It's just at some point, and he is in a different program. He reads at a second grade level, and he's in kindergarten. So we already acknowledge the fact that there is some boredom. So, but everything else, her concern is that she wants him to be sociable. So she doesn't want to separate him from the group. But it's when they're doing these, you know.
Yeah, but you know something, it's a forced socialization. Like if he is really not engaged in this, my sense would be ask her, don't tell her, but ask her if she'd be willing to let him separate out from the group a little bit and work on a task that's more interesting to him and on his level, and then let him socialize during a free play activity or a time that would be just more conducive to socialization.
Right. Right.
I would try to get her to work with you a little bit, see if she can let him move around a little bit more and individualize his work a little bit.
Yes, yes. I completely agree about that. She also suggested to release his energy, like join a team, soccer, this, that, and, you know, all of those things cost money. So, of course, there's the frustration of, you know, that. But But I see it at home. Like, we'll go to Target, and he'll throw himself on the floor. Not because he's having a tantrum, just because at some point he's bored that mommy's taking too long to shop, and he's just like, okay, I'm going to go lie down now. And it's like, no, don't lie down. Just
well,
get up, please. I'm leaving now.
Now, is it, I'm just curious. Now, when he does this, because this will relate to other parents too, would you say you really have been shopping for a long time when he gets to that point?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so sometimes
I totally take responsibility. Or he hasn't eaten.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing.
Or something, yes.
One of the most important parts of peaceful parenting is proactive and preventive. So for any parent who's going out shopping with their kid or doing some activity that's not necessarily interesting to them, it's really important to make sure they're fed, make sure we're not spending too much time where they start to really lose it. Make sure they're not exhausted during those times. Sometimes we can't avoid it. Sometimes you have to go shopping because that's the only time. But try to keep it short. And when you see that he's getting to that point, you know, see if you can possibly cut it short, or maybe you can engage him. If you're in the supermarket, for example, you could say, okay, sweetie, I need you to go count out, you know, five apples and put them in this bag, and then I want you to get six oranges and put them in this bag. And if he picks the bruised ones, you can change them when he's not looking. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So let him get involved, too.
And
yeah,
you know what? I
want to
just,
yeah.
Vanessa, is it Vanessa?
Yes. Vanessa,
well,
yes.
I just want to say something. If the teacher said, did the teacher say he should join a soccer team? Is that what she said?
Yes.
Okay, you know something? This teacher's not going to like us at all, but I don't think that's a good suggestion. I'll tell you why, because one of the things is you just... You said you're new to being a working mom, okay? The last thing you need is a schedule now to get your child to a soccer practice. And truthfully, if the teacher said, give him a soccer ball and play with him in the backyard, that's a better suggestion than joining a team, because he doesn't need
like
to be a part of a
better.
Team. You know, I mean, he really obviously needs to release some energy, and especially with what Naomi said, set yourself up for success when you're shopping. You know, make him part of it, you know?
And also, do the kind of mental set with him before you go. So say to him, what's his first name?
Alex.
Alex. Okay, Alex, honey, we are going shopping. This is the only time mommy has, so we've got to do it now. We're going to bring some snacks. I'm going to try to keep it short, and I'm going to ask you if you could try to keep it together for the time that we're in the store. And I'm going to ask that you not lay down on the floor. And if you feel like you're getting to that point where you just can't stand it anymore, come and tell me, and then we'll see what
we can do.
That's
good. I mean, before I took your, before I went to your UFT class, mm-hmm. I did a lot of reading. I'm obviously one of those parents that do a lot of reading. Okay, what am I doing wrong? What can I do better? Blah, 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 that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But after that, I did a lot of the guidelines, the breathing. I mean, don't do that too much. But the I can handle this. Mine is let me be flexible and strong.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Flexible,
and is it helping? Is all this stuff helping?
It is. It is. So there are moments, like you said, you know, we forget, and we're just like, okay, we got to go to the store right now, and I'm sorry, let's get the coat. And, of course, you forget the snacks, and it's the rushing.
Yeah.
So I just have to, I guess in my moment, I have to think about those kind of things. Maybe ask the teacher to let him release some of his energy. The school system really doesn't allow a lot of time for play. It really doesn't.
That's so sad.
It is.
Yeah, that could be part of the problem.
The curriculum is very, you know, learn this, learn that, learn this, learn that. They have very little time for just recreational play or free play or whatever they call it. It's a treat, actually, free play.
Oh, that's awful.
That's amazing.
I got to tell you something. I spoke at an early childhood conference today, and one of the other speakers, his workshop was entitled Play is the Work of Children.
Right.
That's how they learn. Through play, and our schools are robbing them of that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, thank you. I appreciate your suggestions.
Great. Is anyone else out there?
This is Kathleen in New Jersey.
What's your name?
My name's Kathleen. I'm in New Jersey.
Yes.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Naomi. That was a fabulous talk. I took notes. I wrote everything down. I'm going to pass it on to my local moms group, which I am on the board. In any case, I have three toddlers. Twin boys are 2.5, and my four-year-old little girl.
God bless you.
God did bless me, but I'll tell you, I do it all alone. I have no family close by. In any case, as you can imagine, I'm putting out little fires all day long.
Yeah.
And I just was looking for some comments or maybe some suggestions on just how not to be putting out fires all day long. I feel like I just want some positive discipline.
Well, the first thing is, are you partnered with somebody? You said you had no family.
He works.
Okay.
I do. I have a husband. He's a hard worker, and he works long hours. I rarely see him except on the weekends.
Oh, gee. All right. So you can't even split it with him at night. Because the 15 minutes a day for your crew would be like magic, because that's what they all want. They want you. And some of that bickering is about, you know, they're vying for attention a little bit, or they feel, oh, mommy's with this one or mommy's with that one, and she's not with me. So that 15 minutes a day would be perfect, even if you let one stay up just a little bit later or some way that you can alternate so they feel like they just have you during that time. The other thing is
nap time, so I have some time with
good.
3 hours of nap time. I've been blessed with that.
Oh, thank goodness. Well, that's a miracle, and you can use that time to, you know, give that little individual attention and just cuddle with the one you're with, and, you know, oh, I love you so much, and all that, because they're all going to be wondering, you know, does mommy love the other one more, you know, because they're so close in age, and especially the twins, and, you know, your older daughter, is it?
That's correct.
Yes, probably looking and thinking, oh, these cute little twins, now am I chopped liver? So, you know, you have that whole dynamic going on. The other thing is when they get louder, instead of you getting louder to discipline them, try speaking a little quieter so that they need to almost get quieter themselves to hear you. The third thing is since they're young, you can physically move them. So you can, you know, if you see this is brewing, like sometimes, are you noticing when it's going to start?
Yeah, I can sort of have that kind of perception.
Okay. So you might actually even want to pick one of them up and do a little distraction thing. So you're not even going to say, oh, no, we're not going to argue now. But you might want to say, okay, Susie, you know, you picking up Susie or whomever, and you know what, I need help with this right over here. Come on, let's see if we can do this together. So you're using a distraction technique, and you're also separating them away from each other a little bit by doing that. The third thing is, when they're all quiet and when they're all getting along, compliment them like crazy and describe it. Describe what you see. So let's say the three of them are sitting on the floor playing a game. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, we do puzzles together and we color together.
Okay. Well, I mean, and they're doing it and they're getting along.
Yeah, I can manage that for a small amount of time.
Okay. So in that small amount of time when they're doing it, they're getting along, what you want to do is describe the behavior back to them specifically. So you could say, name each one. You know, what are their three names?
Bailey, Corey, Christopher.
How cute. Bailey, Corey, and Christopher. All right, so Bailey's the big sister, right?
Right.
Bailey, I'm just noticing how you're being so patient with Corey and Christopher. Oh, my goodness, I'm so proud of you. And Corey, I'm noticing the way you're sharing with your brother and your sister. I am so proud of you. And Christopher, I'm noticing how you were just listening when you know, Corey was asking you or whatever, you know, whatever that positive thing is. You want to compliment them on it and let them know you're proud and describe it specifically so they know what it is. So every time you can catch them in the act of doing something the way you like, you want to really capitalize on it as best as you can.
That's great. That's a great tip. Just one more question on raising compassionate children. I know you speak about that as a topic. Are there any tips for this age group that I have that I can implement at this point, to especially the young boys? I want to raise compassionate, loving young men. That is one of my life goals.
Wonderful. And that's totally doable, and you're starting at the right time because they're two. And when are they going to be three?
July.
Okay. How verbal are they?
They're very verbal for 2.5 years old.
Wonderful. So you can start with storybooks and looking at the character's face and asking your children, you know, how does he look in that picture? And teach them the feeling words, happy, sad, embarrassed, frustrated. I mean, that might be a little hard for two, but as they get older, you know, whatever the feeling is, teach them the words, help them identify it, and have them notice it. The noticing is the most important thing. If you're watching a movie or a TV show together, oh, how do you think that person feels right now? Why do you think they feel that way? Oh, look at his face. What do you think he's thinking? Now, if they hurt each other's feelings, you can do the same thing. Look at your brother's face. How do you think that made him feel? And if he says, "Oh, I don't know," you can identify the feeling. You can say, "Well, I don't know. He looks really unhappy to me. And why do you think he's so unhappy right now?" So, and especially if he's the one that did something that made his brother unhappy. So by pointing it out, by having them observe, by naming those feelings words, and by holding them accountable too, by saying, you know, something like that, how would you like it if that was done to you? You'd probably feel badly also. The last thing I want to say for building compassionate children is having them make amends when they've done something wrong. So if one person hurt the other, well, what are you going to do to make it better for that person? And then making sure that they actually do it.
Okay, those are great tips. I'll definitely have it all written down.
Wonderful.
I'll email great. You and let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please do.
Great. Well, let's take one. Get your email newsletter, Peaceful Parenting. It's great. Thanks.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned it. For anyone on the line who doesn't get it, it's free. It comes out about once a month. And you can access it through my website, learningpeace.com.
I'm Cherie from Rockford, Michigan.
Hi, Cherie.
Hi. I had a question for you. I have three boys, and I'm always looking for good ways to raise boys. They are 7, 8, and 12,
mm-hmm.
and the younger two are 15 months apart.
Wow.
And then the older one is 4 years older than his younger siblings. So I have all kinds of dynamics going on all the time.
Yeah.
My oldest and my youngest are extremely outgoing and verbal and just very strong-willed children. And my middle child is more tentative and a little bit more feeling-oriented and a little bit more, I don't know, beat up by the other two, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
My biggest struggle right now, and I guess my biggest question for you guys, is my husband is much more laid back with his discipline, very, very involved as a father with the kids, very excellent. I mean, very, very involved dad. But he's also much more laid back, and he always says, pick your battles. And, you know, I guess I'm much more readily to jump in and make a correction or do something. And I'm the only female in the house.
You're outnumbered.
Very outnumbered. And a lot of times when I'll jump in there, correction or, you know, say this is the way it's going to be, he won't necessarily back me. And I've had a lot of discussions with him on that because we're struggling a lot right now. And then I tend to be more of the yeller because I feel like I'm not being respected. And we've had a lot of discussions on this recently, and he said that he thinks that it's hard for him to back something. He feels like we should model what the behaviors that we want the children to do. And if you're yelling at them, because my boys fight a lot, and they're they're very, very hard boys. I have a friend that tells me all the time they don't know how I put up with all of it. And it's just mass chaos around my house constantly, the strong-willed and the noise level and all of that. But anyway, I just, you know, he says, well, how can you be yelling at them and telling them not to be yelling? How can you be, you know, spanking them and telling them not to hit each other? How can you saying, you know, whatever and telling them not to say things they shouldn't say?
Okay,
and
yeah.
His big thing is, you know, if you want respect, you have to earn it. You have to model the behavior you want them to.
Right, but the thing is, he's not giving you the kind of support you need to help get that respect from them.
Oh,
so,
no, I don't feel that I'm getting that because he's much more of the softie, and I'm much more of the, you know, disciplined person.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what bothers me when they do things doesn't bother him as quickly.
Can you give me an example of one of those types of things?
Well, when they're fighting. They're fighting amongst each other.
When you say fighting, physically fighting?
Well, either physically or verbally. Yelling at each other or physically, like, you know, I touched you last, you touched me last, and then they're just kind of, you know, running or fighting or just being inappropriate in, you know, in settings.
Okay, when you're out and they do this, is that when it bothers you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We just went on a family vacation for 10 days, and I came home, and I needed a vacation for my vacation.
Okay.
But he says our kids are great, and why am I being crazy? I'm not bothered by our kids, and why do I act like it's a big deal?
Okay.
I feel like we parent very differently.
That's what it sounds like, and it sounds like the two of you probably would benefit from sitting down with somebody and you know, getting a little closer to the same page with your parenting styles, because it's just gonna get worse, you know, unless you nip it. Yeah, and I mean, when they're teens, forget it, because then, you know, the big issues come up. So perhaps the two of you were raised differently too, and you know, your parenting style. So, but you know what? It sounds like you've got a really solid foundation to work with. And it sounds like your husband is a wonderful father. He's very involved. He cares about the kids. And you clearly are trying the very, very best you can in a really difficult situation, and you're doing what you feel you have to do given the circumstances. So, I mean, I think this is going to be workable, but you're going to need to really sit down and talk to someone who can help you get a little closer together
and, you know, which battles you're going to pick, and also how he can back you up when you need it so that you feel like you don't have to resort to screaming or spanking. So, you know, he's going to need to give a little, and you're probably going to need to maybe back off a little on some of the things that you can back off on. Do you know what I'm saying? Not the core issues. Like, you want to, the core issues that are terribly important to you, don't back off on those. But if it's something you can live with, what's that?
The biggest one for me is respect.
Yes.
I want my kids to be respectful of adults, of me, of him.
Right.
I don't like it when they lip off and say, no, they're not going to do this, they're not going to do that. And I get really angry about that. And then I get angry when he hears them doing that and he either doesn't listen, doesn't pay attention, or doesn't help get the situation under control.
Right. Yeah, that's where you need to be working more as a team.
Right.
And the other piece is, family meetings are going to help, but I'm not going to recommend the family meetings first. I think you guys need to get a little more on the same page before you do the family meetings. But once you do get a little closer together on, you know, how you're going to work together, then if you can all sit down, the five of you, and talk about some of these issues, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Like the rule I used to have in my house, and I had two sons. I still do, but, you know, they're grown. And it was like, you don't have to like what I ask you to do, but you do need to do it. Can you complain about it? Yes, but you can't do it in a disrespectful way to me. So in other words, if I say, all right, I need you to go clean up your room now. And if my son, you know, hates the idea, he could say, well, I don't think that's fair. I really wish I didn't have to do it. And then I would be like, uh-huh, I hear what you're saying. And guess what? You do have to do it anyway. Now, that's okay. But if he said something like, no, you can't make me, that's not okay. That's not acceptable, because that's like openly disrespectful and defiant.
Right.
So these are the areas where you want your husband's support, where when you work together a little bit more and you can define where you want to go in terms of what you're going to let go of and where he's going to back you up, then if a situation like that arises where a child really is openly defiant to you, but your children, but you and your husband have, you know, made an agreement about working together, then it would be appropriate for your husband to step in and say, excuse me, but that is not allowed in our house. Don't do it again.
Where do we go to get this help?
There are family service organizations. Sometimes social workers will do that kind of thing. When I did it, because I've done it myself, you know, with my children, we found a family therapist. He was wonderful, and he would sit down with us, and we would, you know, work through these types of issues. It didn't take forever, and it made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, because I'm not so sure. He's not a real big proponent on therapy and all that, so I'm not sure.
Well, don't look at it as therapy. Look at it as gaining some strategies. You know, that's really what you want. You want some. Actually, you know what? I was going to say, I do peaceful parenting coaching. This might be just exactly what could help, because I do it by phone also. So this is non-therapeutic. It's skills and strategy based, and it's about changing, you know, changing the way things that are done, changing them in a way that things are working better. So,
it's basically the tips like you suggested, you know, in this call. I mean, that's workable to anybody. I mean, anybody can use tips. That's
right.
Great.
But it's specific.
Are they on your website?
Situation.
The information on your
website? A lot of the stuff that we talked about is on my website. If you just go through it, and there's a site map. There's also a section on the Peaceful Parenting Coaching. So, you know,
if somebody wanted to say, you know, retain you as a coach, the information is out there. Okay, that's terrific. Well, we're running out of Cherie, were you done with that? I don't want to cut you short.
No, thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Okay, great. Well, we did run over, but it's so incredibly valuable. Naomi, thank you so much. I think everyone on the phone probably did what I did and has papers with all kinds of notes all over it based on what
Wonderful.
You said. This was really terrific stuff and very, you know, this is usable. This is what parents really want. We want those, we don't want to have to, you know, read the 800-page manual. We just want to get these tips. And thank you so much for doing that for us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Some closing comments, folks. This call will be posted to our website, parentalwisdom.com, under Park Bench. You can listen to the call at your convenience by clicking on the links on the website. It's obviously not there yet, but it will be. You'll find some other calls we've done as well. Now, we're all kids at heart. We all like goodie bags at the end of a party. We're no different. And ours come in the form of information. Again, on our website, parentalwisdom.com, you'll see something called free reports. And Naomi has graciously prepared some reports called, you'll see Naomi Drew, Creating Peace, and Naomi Drew, Helping Kids Mediate. So it's just fantastic information. And Naomi, for one more time, could you please tell us, just give us your website and what kind of information these parents can find out there.
Okay. The website, again, is learningpeace.com, so that's learningpeace.com. The newsletter, the free newsletter I mentioned, Peaceful Parents, is on the website. You just have to, you know, follow that link and subscribe yourself, and it is for free. And then my books are all listed on the website as well, Peaceful Parents, Peaceful Kids. The Kids Guide to Working Out Conflicts is a book that you can buy and read with your kids, or if they're 9 or 10 and up, they can read it themselves. And then there are a number of books for teachers as well on the site, and a post-September 11th parenting book called Hope and Healing.
Wow. Thank you so much. Naomi, this was terrific. You've just given us some wonderful insights. I thank you for your time. And callers, thank you so much for listening in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have
Appreciate
a good night.
It.
Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.